Sports Week in all. Listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. With just over 2 months to the kickoff of the World Cup football tournament in Russia, teams are dealing with injuries and making managerial moves. At a packed news conference in Tokyo Monday, the Japan Football Association announced Akira Nishino will replace the Bosnian Vahid Halihadzic as the team's World Cup coach. The 63-year-old Nishino is a former midfielder for Japan's national team. He coached Japan's under-23 team at the 1996 Olympics in Atlanta. And most recently, he served as the Japan Football Association's technical director. Football Association President Kozo Toshima said poor results and a lack of communication and trust with the players were the main reasons for Halihadzic's dismissal. The 65-year-old Bosnian coach led Algeria to the round of 16 at the 2014 World Cup in Brazil. He also guided Ivory Coast to World Cup qualification in 2010, although he was fired before the tournament kicked off in South Africa. Japan is grouped with Poland, Senegal, and Colombia for the first round of the 2018 World Cup in Russia. Well, with 66 days to go to the World Cup, here's a World Cup fun fact for our VOA listeners. The colorful tradition of World Cup mascots began at the 1966 World Cup in England. World Cup Willie was the first tournament mascot ever, and he's still considered the best by many people. World Cup Willie was an English lion that sported a Union Jack shirt with the words World Cup on the front. And World Cup Willie is credited with mascots being introduced at other major sporting events. The official mascot of the 2018 World Cup in Russia is Zabivaka, which means the one who scores in Russian. And it's described as a very suitable name for this wolf who radiates fun, charm, and confidence. Well, you might say Tunisian striker Youssef M'Sakhny was radiating a lot of confidence ahead of his first World Cup appearance. But M'Sakhny's hopes for Russia 2018 have been dashed after he suffered a serious knee injury over the weekend. Joining us now with that story and more African football news is reporter Samson Omale. Good evening, Samson.
Good evening to you, Sonny. Tunisia forward Youssef M'Sakhny will miss this summer's World Cup in Russia after being ruled out for 6 months because of a knee injury. The 27-year-old, capped 39 times, was injured during Al Duhal's 5-2 victory over Asselia in the Qatar Stars League on Saturday. Tunisia will face England, Belgium, and Panama in Group G of the World Cup, which starts on the 14th of June. Morocco will play Ukraine, Slovakia, and Estonia to prepare them ahead of the fifth World Cup appearance in Russia. Javi Renat's side will square up against Ukraine and Slovakia on May 30th and June the 4th, respectively, in Switzerland, before traveling to Estonia to take on Morten Rem's side on June the 9th. The Atlas Lions returned to the global stage for the first time in 20 years and have been paired with Iran and European heavyweights Portugal and Spain in Group B.
Voice of America.
In women's football news, Harambee Starlets, the Kenyan senior women's soccer national squad, are through to the next round of the African Women's Cup of Nations qualifiers despite being held to a goalless draw by Uganda in Kampala on Sunday. Kenya are through on aggregate after winning 1-0 in the first leg at the Kenyatta Stadium in Machakos on Wednesday. Nigeria Football Federation President Amaju Pinnick has made excuses for Nigeria's Super Falcons' humiliating 8-0 loss to France in a friendly on Friday evening, saying the Federation put all of their efforts on the Super Eagles. In a statement, the Nigeria Football Federation president pointed out that the Super Falcons are still the best team in Africa and fans should not gloat over the result, as it was a friendly that the coaches will use to correct the deficiencies in the team. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria.
Thanks, Samson. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. In more women's football news, the world's number one ranked team, the United States, defeated regional rival Mexico Sunday 6-2 in a friendly international match played in Houston, Texas. Alex Morgan scored two goals for the American women, who also got goals from Mallory Pugh, Lindsay Horan, Megan Rapinoe, and Carly Lloyd. The goal for Lloyd, a two-time FIFA World Female Player of the Year, was the 100th of her international career. A crowd of more than 15,000 attended the match at BBVA Compass Stadium in Houston, which is the home of Major League Soccer's Houston Dynamo Club, as well as the Houston Dash of the National Women's Soccer League. The U.S. Women's National Soccer Team also defeated Mexico 4 days ago, 4-1, in another friendly played in the southern U.S. city of Jacksonville, Florida. Now let's go down under to Australia's Gold Coast, where Nigeria won its first two medals Monday, both silver, at the Commonwealth Games. Chukwu Abuka Enekwechi won silver for Nigeria in the men's shot put after he threw a personal best 21.14 meters in his third attempt. The 25-year-old Enekwechi finished second behind New Zealand's Tomas Walsh, who had a gold medal winning throw of 21.41 meters. Canada's Tim Nidau won the bronze. Nigeria's other silver medal on Monday came in table tennis in the men's team event. India defeated Nigeria 3-0 in the final to capture the gold medal, while England got the bronze with a 3-0 victory over Singapore. Elsewhere at the Commonwealth Games, let's give a sunny side of sports salute to South African sprinter Akani Simbine, who won the gold medal Monday in the men's 100-meter dash. The 24-year-old Simbine had a winning time of 10.03 seconds. Another South African, Henrico Bruntjes, won the silver in 10.17 seconds, and Johan Blake of Jamaica won the bronze medal in 10.19 seconds. Ugandan athlete Stella Chesang also gets a sunny side of sports salute. Stella clocked just over 31 minutes and 45 seconds Monday to win the gold medal at the Commonwealth Games in the women's 10,000 meters race. Kenya's Stacy Ndiwa won the silver medal, and another Ugandan, Merceline Chalangat, finished third to get the bronze. Now, this was Uganda's second gold medal at Gold Coast 2018. Joshua Cheptegei won the men's 5,000 meters final on Sunday. Host Australia is dominating the medals table after Monday's action. The Aussies have a total of 106 medals, 39 gold, 33 silver, and 34 bronze. England is in second place with 63 medals, 22 gold, 25 silver, and 16 bronze. India is in third place overall with 19 medals, 10 gold, 4 silver, and 5 bronze. South Africa is the top performing African nation so far at the 2018 Commonwealth Games. The South Africans are in fifth place overall with 18 medals, 8 gold, 5 silver, and 5 bronze. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Just ahead, my VOA colleague Gwen Uten will have Masters Golf and Davis Cup Tennis news. So please, keep on the sunny side.
So keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help you every day. It will brighten all the way if you keep on the sunny side of life.
I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Turning to golf, a 27-year-old American from Texas has won his first major title at the Masters. Joining us once again with the details is my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. American pro golfer Patrick Reed clinched his first major championship at the Masters in Augusta, Georgia, finishing 15 under par. After his final round on Sunday, Patrick talked about what it took for him to don the green jacket.
The way those guys played towards the end, you know, with Jordan shoots a 64 today, and you know, Ricky going to shoot 67, having to go shoot under par on my final round of your first major to win, it was hard, and you know, it was awesome and satisfying to, you know, make the clutch putts I did on the back nine after feeling like I wasn't really making anything all day. To make that one on 12 for birdie seemed to kind of give me that momentum and just really that belief going the last couple that no matter what they throw at me, I can do this and I have a chance.
Teammate Ricky Fowler spoke after finishing in second place, one stroke behind Patrick Reed.
I didn't look at the scoreboards a whole lot today, but you know, I wanted to kind of check in and see where things were at around the turn. And I saw Jordan was off and running today. So, you know, to see that was kind of a kick in the butt to, you know, I knew I needed a good back nine, but to see one of your buddies playing well, it's, you know, I knew what I needed to do. Obviously, I knew where Patrick was at. And, I mean, I'm definitely happy with the week, but, you know, at the same time, not happy that we finished second. Obviously, I want that green jacket, and this is a step in the right direction, though.
Tiger Woods finished one over par in his first major since 2015. Tiger has endured 4 back operations in as many years, and many thought his golfing days were over. Tiger talked from the greens and said although he didn't play as well as he wanted, he's happy to be back in the game.
It's disappointing that I didn't hit the ball well enough, but to be able just to be out here competing again, if you would have said that last year at this particular time, I would have said you're crazy. I had a hard time just sitting or walking. So now to be able to play and compete and hit the ball the way I did, man, that's quite a bit of change from last year.
Moving from Augusta, Georgia to Nashville, Tennessee. In tennis, the USA has advanced to the Davis Cup semifinals after defeating Belgium 4-0. Reporter Craig Gabriel spoke with Davis Cup captain and former world number one Jim Courier on the court.
Jim Courier, in Music City, your team has hit all the right notes this weekend.
Yeah, but it wasn't easy. The Belgians certainly played their part as well. They played very, very tough. All 3 matches. You know, this doubles team is not someone that we knew a whole lot about, but they earned a lot of respect from our guys. It took us a while to really dig our teeth into the match, and that second set tiebreaker was critical for us.
How amazing does it feel to be in the semifinals of the Davis Cup for the first time since 2012?
Yeah, I'm not sure whether I'm happy or relieved, to be honest, Craig. It's we've had plenty of chances and just haven't been able to get through the line, but the team came through. You know, look, we're fortunate. We're happy. We're looking forward to an opportunity in the semifinals.
Obviously, in doubles, it is a team effort, the two guys out there. But Ryan Harrison was consistently good throughout this match today.
Yeah, listen, Ryan, he's a quality doubles player. You don't win a major if you can't get the job done. And we know Jack is such an electric player, too. The other team just made it so difficult. They smothered the net. They made it very, very hard. There are very few open lanes for our guys to play through. But we just hung in there, didn't drop serve much, and, you know, just the one time, and eventually finally cracked the code at the end.
Was it concerning you that you never got to break serve?
Yeah, we talked a lot about it on changeover. We had five chances there in the third set and couldn't get it done. We finally did some toggling there at the end with the second serve returns, had both guys play back just to give it a little bit more space, a little bit more time for us to make things happen. And that seemed to help out a lot.
And I guess the important time, you broke serve for the match.
Yeah, that's, listen, we would have been happy with the win anyway, with no breaks and a breaker, but there's certainly a sense of satisfaction to finally get over that line, because it's very frustrating to go that long without break and serve.
Last one. Semi-finals, you're going to be away if it's Croatia or Kazakhstan.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts?
Well, either way, they're going to be difficult ties, difficult teams. They get to choose the setup, the surface, the location, all that stuff. All that we know is we'll be on the road after the U.S. Open, and I'm just, I have my fingers crossed that my team is going to be in full health and in full flight from the U.S. Summer Series, and hopefully we'll have a lot of momentum to work with when we get overseas.
Jimmy, congratulations.
Thanks, Greg.
That was USA Davis Cup captain Jim Courier. He spoke with reporter Craig Gabriel from the court in Nashville, Tennessee. USA enters the semifinals for the first time since 2012. They will play against Croatia. And Spain defeated Germany 3-2 in the quarterfinals with the help of Rafael Nadal, playing his first event since sitting out of tennis action with a hip problem. Like the U.S., Spain also returns to the semifinals for the first time since 2012. Spain will visit France in the Final Four. The semifinal games will be played in September. More sporting news to come. Back to you, Sonny.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Earlier in the show, I mentioned the U.S. women's national soccer team beating Mexico 6-2 in Houston, Texas. 45 years ago in Houston, American tennis great Billie Jean King beat Bobby Riggs in straight sets 6-4, 6-3, and 6-3 in the Battle of the Sexes. Tennis pioneer Donald Dell attended the nationally televised exhibition match in Houston. The 79-year-old Dell is a former U.S. Davis Cup captain, one of the first professional sports agents, and he was very instrumental in the creation of the Association of Tennis Professionals, the current Men's Professional Tour, in 1972. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, let's listen in again to Donald Dell's insights into the Battle of the Sexes.
Well, just by happenstance, I happened to be at the match and saw it live in Houston in 1973. And it was an exciting time because going into that match, because Bobby had beaten Margaret Court so easily, everyone, I think, felt that Riggs would prevail. And as the match went on, it was very clear that Billie Jean was a lot stronger and a lot better, and Riggs was getting tired. But I think much more importantly, that in the bigger picture, you know, you often hear the phrase battle of the sexes, depending on what it is, whether it's an argument with your wife or whether it's something that you're betting with somebody. I mean, there's always that phrase, and I think the phrase is, you know, forever, the battle of sexes. I mean, it's something that a lot of people relate to and laugh about. And I think this match really set an interesting tone. And I don't say the match did it, but shortly, I believe a couple of years thereafter, they came in with Title IX in collegiate. The Congress passed Title IX, which basically said that women in collegiate sports had the right to the same number of scholarships and the same funding that men did. And that was a tremendous important change for women's sports across the country. I think the Battle of the Sexes was sort of a preview of that and kind of got people thinking about that, you know, women could certainly compete and compete at another level. And, of course, you've seen what's happened now. That's sort of been traveling on into a business and corporate world. I don't mean there's a battle of the sexes, but corporately, I happened to be watching something on television, and they were saying they were talking about the game changers and the women who are so impactful in corporations. They named 26 different new CEOs, all of whom were women, in major companies like Pepsi, like GM. And it was a very interesting, you know, 10-minute discussion. Well, I think that's kind of a fallout, if you will, from a fun, playful, but competitive thing called Battle of the Sexes with Billie Jean and Bobby Riggs. I think they set a tone that's really still going.
You mentioned how you were at the match. Very much a spectacle. King comes onto the court, kind of like Cleopatra, carried by four muscle men. Does tennis need more of that today?
Well, I think certainly that was a spectacular promotion, and I thought it was very clever. I always thought Billie Jean had a good chance, depending on the court service, because he's a wonderful volleyer. By happenstance, nothing to do with the Battle of the Sexes, I played mixed doubles with Billie Jean at Wimbledon the first 3 years she came over. And so I knew her quite well and liked her a great deal, and we were very good friends. And she was a very, very natural volleyer and a very good one, particularly in doubles. She won 10 Grand Slam titles in women's doubles, for example. And if you watch that match, I happened to watch just by happenstance, a thing on Billie Jean's Light was on HBO, an hour show, and it showed her playing lots of different matches, and she was a great volleyer, particularly on her forehand volley, and she came into net against Bobby Riggs many, many times in that match. She did not stay back on the baseline and rally with him, and I think partly that was because the court was reasonably quick. It was not real fast, and it was not soft like grass, so the ball was bouncing at a pretty good height. And she attacked it very well and came in behind it a lot, if you watch that match or tape thereof. And that was one of her great strengths, was her quickness at net and her volleying ability.
Some people forget that Bobby Riggs beat Margaret Court before he played Billie Jean King. What about Bobby Riggs? How would you describe his legacy?
Well, Bobby, you know, Bobby in his own right, first of all, he was 55 years old in this match, but Bobby in his own right was a great professional player. I mean, if you talk to Jack Kramer about Bobby Riggs, he won the U.S. Open. He won a lot of national men's titles before he turned pro. And then on the pro tour, which was mostly the Kramer tour, he was a very big factor when he was, you know, when he was 28 and 30, 32 years old. This was 25 years later that he was still playing. But he wasn't going to dominate her the way he did when he was a player at 30 years of age. I mean, the 55-year-old player is quite different than the 25-year-old, and he showed that. But in his own right, he was a very, very good player.
That's tennis pioneer Donald Dell, who was one of the co-founders of the City Open Tournament, the annual professional tournament here in Washington in 1969. And Donald Dell spoke with me here in Washington. By the way, this year's City Open Tournament is scheduled from July 28th to August 5th at Rock Creek Park Tennis Center here in Washington. Tournament organizers recently announced that Americans Sloane Stephens and John Isner, coming off titles at the Miami Open in Florida, will return to the Washington event this year. And that wraps up the April 9th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer John Dryden. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
U.S. Ambassador to the Republic of Congo, Todd Haskell, kicked off Embassy Brazzaville's Goa Goa Week on March 19th. The inauguration event was the first in a full week of activities to educate Congolese entrepreneurs and government workers on the benefits of the African Growth and Opportunity Act, or AGOA. Signed into law in 2000, now extended through 2025, AGOA provides 40 eligible sub-Saharan African countries in 2018 the ability to export more than 6,500 different types of products into the United States duty-free. Through its eligibility criteria, AGOA encourages countries to make progress in establishing policies that support a market-based economy, a strong rule of law, poverty reduction, and systems to combat corruption and bribery, while not erecting barriers to U.S. trade and investment. Embassy Brazzaville brought AGOA expert Cara Diallo from the USAID West African Trade Hub to present the steps necessary to export to the United States and available resources for business owners to find more information at www.agoa.info. Currently, more than 80% of exports to the United States from the Republic of Congo are from petroleum-based products. However, the future health and expansion of the Congo economy will rely on export diversification. Through the multitude of media interviews, articles, meetings with ministry officials, business owners, and entrepreneurs throughout the Goa Goa Week, Embassy Brazzaville hopes to see an increase in both the amount and diversity of Congolese products entering the United States marketplace in the coming years, while strengthening the Congolese market for increased U.S. exports to the country. Congo has tremendous potential for economic diversification in the areas of agriculture, ecotourism, and transportation, said Ambassador Haskell in his remarks. This potential cannot be realized by one ministry or one business. Developing the Republic of Congo's economy, he said, is a team project.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, my friends. This is Sunday Shomari, host of Let's Talk. Join me Monday for another exciting edition of your show. Our topic next week will be kitchen. Who belongs there? This is next Monday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm Lina Ormodou, host of Health Chat. Next week on Health Chat, we will discuss some basic steps you can take to help you stay in good health when traveling. Our guest is Dr. Ken Red Cross, internal medicine specialist and concierge doctor. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. Health Chat, this Tuesday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. VOA. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.